Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Ever catch yourself eating the same flavorless dinner 3 days in a row? Dreaming of something better? Well, HelloFresh is your guilt-free dream come true, baby. It's me, Keke Palmer. Let's wake up those taste buds with hot, juicy pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Mm. Hello Fresh. Stop dreaming of all the delicious possibilities and dig in at HelloFresh.com. Let's get this dinner party started.
This is Starship Sova. Everybody, welcome. Hello and welcome to Aura of the Lights, show number 103. I am your host, Tony C. Smith. So yes, back on the show again. I hope everyone is fine and dandy. Different show today. I got together everyone who was kind of involved in my little dream, my little project. And today's show is really going to be everyone from the likes of Dee, Josh, and even, you know, Larry and Skeet, who kind of all kind of have helped and put together, and especially Larry, who's kind of still helping, still going on strong there. It's just really a chat amongst friends, you know what I mean? And it was so nice to get them all on board, you know, and just kind of say hello and thank you, you know, and actually listen to kind of how they came about doing, you know, their certain aspects of the book. So I hope you enjoy this special show. I also just want to mention, you know what I mean, which is just fantastic news. I got a text on my phone the other day, and it's from Diane Severson. Diane is there. She has given birth to a little baby boy. Go on, Diane. He is called Dante Ingeno Mori. And Diane, you know what I mean, she's probably sitting in the hospital now at home resting, thinking he messed that name up as well. But Diane, honestly, that is fantastic. He was born at 6 minutes past two on October the 3rd. He weighs in at 4,115 grams, which I ain't got a clue what that all relates to, everything like that in pounds. English is pounds. 55 centimetres long and has a full head of dark hair. And when I got the text off Diane, she was still in hospital there. She's had a cesarean, but everyone's fine, everything's hunky-dory, and Diane will be back at home Thursday. So Diane, that's just amazing news. I don't know if you'll get this message or this show until, you know, you're kind of back on your feet maybe, but that's just amazing. Do you know what I mean? Start them off young on the starship. The first one born on, you know, on the bridge of the ship. Fantastic. Diane, I honestly am chuffed to bits. So there you go. Another quick little bit of news just for anyone out there. It's my son's birthday, Reedy. Reedy is now 8 years old and he's present, and it's doing my wife head in. We've getting a bearded dragon, like a lizard, and it's got its own kind of like vivarium, kind of hot little kind of place to live. And that was all fine and great until we found out, or we knew what it was. It has to eat. It's got to eat live crickets. Well, you know what I mean? That's where. So, just to let you know, that's what my kind of world's been wrapped round in for these past few days. Try to bloody put the crickets into the cage so you'll eat them. So there you go. Happy birthday, Reed Robert Smith. My son, fantastic. Right, I'm going to play you next the show that I recorded. It was recorded a few days ago, and like I say, it's just really a big thank you from me to, you know, everyone that's involved, and to let yous get a kind of bit of a backstage view of how it was put together and, you know, things that went on. So we have the A-team that came about for this Starship Sofa Stories Volume 1. We've got D. Kniff. D, the guy actually that kicked all this off, sent that little email over, and from there sprang this Starship Sofa Stories. D, it's so nice to... This is actually the first time we've talked together as well, isn't it?
It is, yeah. We've managed to do the whole thing without everyone's lifting a phone, which is pretty amazing.
Well, it's funny, you know what, because when you first got your email, you know what I mean, I was looking at your name, and you kind of, I couldn't tell if you were male, female, you know what I mean, I didn't know where the dickens you come from. Just this email came out of the blue, and I've mentioned this on the show, you know, a couple of times, I've never wanted to go down that way, you know, like, and kind of get the stories in the paperback. So, Dee, why did you kind of suggest that? Did you have any inkling that it might be difficult to get the stories, or were you just thinking, well, he's played them on there, you know, surely they'll just let him?
Yeah, I've just presumed that you'd had permission to run them on the audio show, that, you know, it couldn't be that much harder to ring up and say, hey, can we stick it into print? But I kind of think it probably is a lot harder to get it in print than it is on audio.
Well, it's funny because, like I say, I've never wanted to go that way, and then when you seen the email, you know what I mean, and then you suggested, like, this kind of, basically it was the free PDF that you suggested, and then, you know, we'll kind of just give it away free, and then, you know, the kind of penny drops, and, you know, this could turn into something nice. So, but what I want to say is thank you so much for that first email. You know, shy Bens don't get anything, so please drop us an email.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it for a very long time. I think it must be about 3 months that it had been in the back of my head, and I just kept saying, oh, I'll email Tony this week, I'll email him, and I'd forget. And then all of a sudden, I think it was episode 98 or something, and I said, oh, I better do it now, because you know, there's only 2 weeks, and you know, we ended up with that incredibly tight deadline, but I think we managed to pull it together, I think, heroically.
Oh, yes. I mean, like, say, I don't know how many times we, like, communicated now, you know, even now, you know, we're doing...
Must be thousands of emails at this stage.
Well, I tell you what, you know, it came together, this kind of, this Starship Sofas, but, and when Dee mentioned it, you know what I mean, it like I said, the penny was going round and round in my head, and then I said, if we're going to do it good, you know, this place needs, like, a home. And then it just so happens I've been working with Josh Lighty, you know, our good friend Josh, who kind of sorted out all the forums. And I thought, shall I chance, you know what I mean? Because I don't like to kind of push me luck. You know, and I thought, fuck it, I'll email Josh and I'll see what he says. And Josh, sir, you're on the line here now. Thank you for saying yes.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Tony.
Oh, Josh, you're a star. And I mean, like I say, you know, when I emailed you, what was your first reaction? Were you thinking, oh, here he goes again? Or was it something that you kind of, I guess it's, is it nice for you to have, like I say, a portfolio where you can show people, or does that not come into it?
Well, portfolio is nice, but mostly, you know, when you do a lot of business websites and that kind of thing, I do web design full time. So it's nice to do something, you know, that you're interested in and that has a, you know, kind of life of its own.
Well, I tell you what's weird as well, man, because I'm sure you must be working some strange hours when you're doing your own stuff. Do you know what I mean? Because I'm, like, say, maybe 10 o'clock my time, UK. I get emails off you. So God knows what time you're staying up till, sometimes working on, or have been working on that website. Are you a late night guy?
Yeah, I pretty much have to burn the candle at both ends with a day job and a couple little kids, so you have to sneak in time when you can late at night.
But Josh, honestly, it's worth every second of them late nights for you there, sir. Well, we had this kind of site done, and Dee kind of put out this idea. Then we needed, you know what I mean, it had to have this kind of cover, and there was only one guy, you know what I mean, I was going to kind of ask to make this cover come about. And especially when, you know, through doing the kind of shows, Skeet's doing some shows from, you know, he's kind of said it'd be great to have a cover on a book, you know, that's what he's always done. And I thought, well, I'll try and see if he'll do this. And I know Skeet has been so busy lately, do you know what I mean? But Skeet, you're there, and what an amazing job you did. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. I'm glad to be here.
Hey, honestly, I mean, you know, like I say, and tell us if I pester you, you know what I mean? Because I'm always kind of sending emails over to you. How did, and my kind of brief for that was like rockets and women. So how, had you had this idea, Skeet, for this cover? Or did this just, this cover, because I've got it in my hands there now. And as soon as I seen it, you know what I mean? The kind of shivers on the back of the, you know, the kind of hair on the back of the neck. Had you had this idea in your mind for a while, or is this something that just kind of came straight out?
Well, no, actually, Larry had sent me an email asking me the same thing, and I had originally just been racking my brain trying to figure out, you know, what I was going to do for this after I got your email. But ultimately, what it turned out being my big inspiration was this old 1980s movie called Iceman. And, you know, it's where they thaw this frozen ice man. And I was thinking, well, it'd be an interesting thing to do to be able to reverse the roles where the caveman's finding something from the future versus the future finding something from the past. So that just jumped out at me, and I just went for it. And it turned out pretty good, I think.
God, it certainly did, Skeet. I mean, it was just an amazing. And joining us as well, you know, like you say, it's now kind of moving to the final stage, or like even like a special stage. We've got Larry on the line there. And Larry's actually, you know, as everyone knows now, Larry's going through probably hell and back and damnation to kind of to bring up like a story, which I think is a fantastic idea. You know, get the artwork done first and then write the story. Larry, how are you doing with that?
Yeah. Doing pretty well. Up to somewhere between 9,000 and 10,000 words now. Many of which words will go away eventually. Hopefully, every time I cut something, it ends up adding another couple of thousand words. So that's not necessarily the case. But right now, it's in the kitchen stinks. Kitchen stinks stage. Yeah, that's the one. It's got pretty much everything I'm thinking about this world in it right now. Eventually, a lot of that's going to have to go. So I suspect, as I mentioned in some of the other process reports that I've given, that it'll probably be somewhere between 10 and 12,000 words. And that doesn't say anything qualitatively about it, of course. I'm liking a lot of it. I'm hating a good chunk of it. And I suspect that'll be the stuff that will stay. It's going interestingly. It is not Skeet's Iceman reversal. It is something similar, but not quite there.
Larry, have you thought of the kind of questions supposed to have been going through your mind there? What happens when you get to your kind of, you must have like a kind of deadline. What happens when you're still thinking about cutting stuff and deadlines are approaching? Have you got something in your mind? Have you got like a kind of bit of therapy to help you get through that? Or
no, I mean, it's not that difficult, really. I know you in your introductions to my little reports that I've been doing for the regular episodes. I heard that chuckle. You've emphasized the agony I'm going through. Actually, that's I'm not agonizing. I just sound agonized when I'm trying to explain myself, and I'm trying to make, you know, kind of write down all the stuff that gets forgotten about after you finish the story. You sit there at the computer and you look at it and you type and you write and you think, oh, that's shit, so get rid of that. And there's a little bit of agony because a lot of the time when you put something down, you say, that's really nice. I really like that. And then you realize, yeah, but it doesn't do anything for the story. So, like I say, kill the children. You got to get rid of a lot of stuff that
Hey, Larry, don't feel bad. It's the same thing with artwork, man. A lot of times I'm sitting down, I'll draw something. I'm like, oh, it looks great. And then I realize it's not at all what the customer's wanting. So I got to start all over again, you know?
Yeah, that must be in particular the case when you're working for someone else, right?
Oh yeah,
yeah. That was a lot for me as well. I work in advertising, so an awful lot of what gets presented is thrown right back at you, and it's like, you know, can you make the logo bigger and make the message smaller and you know, design by committee.
And do everything that you know to be wrong, but we want it, and we're paying your salary, so there it is, put it in.
Exactly what it is.
You know what really kicks it, too, is when they say, okay, do A and B, and you do A and B, and they're like, no, we really want C and D. And so you're just going back and forth with the guy. Oh, I love those people.
Skeet, was it easier for you to have like a free run on it, or would you have liked, like I say, a firmer brief, you know, to kind of guide you, or was it just like a doodle in the end for you?
No, it wasn't at all. I mean, I have a really bad habit of, I guess you'd call it bad, most of the time it works out. I usually start out with the intent of doing like thumbnails and sketches and concept art and all this stuff. But I have this kind of a tick that I tend to start something and then I just go all the way with it. I just can't seem to stop once I've started. So, especially with this one, once I started it, it was so much fun because, you know, for once, which is very rare lately, I'm doing what I want to do pretty much on my own. It's my ideas, and, you know, I say it looks good or bad to that degree, and usually I don't have that freedom at all. So, I mean, I know you guys wanted to stick to some sort of basic guideline of, you know, the Pulp Fiction idea and make it science fiction and all that, but as far as the content itself, you guys kind of let me have free reign. So I really enjoyed that.
You know, you kind of mentioned there about the kind of pulp. What made you come up with this idea then? Because I think that has been fundamentally, you know, the kind of probably the building block that's kind of kicked it off to where it's gone. You know, this certain style, you know, harking back to them kind of golden age days. What made you kind of, was it just like a lucky chance, or has this been bubbling in your mind?
It's been in the back of my head for a while, I think. I'm a big fan of the McSweeney's books. I don't know if you know that McSweeney's, every issue is completely different. You know, they're hardback, paperback, junk mail, magnetic covers, wraparound covers. Every issue is a different size and, you know, a different type of magazine. But the layouts are primarily the same inside. And it's just, it's a very nice structured layout. And I've always been a big fan of it. And I think that was kind of where I came from, and that was, you know, what would McSweeney's do?
Well, it's been a wonderful nostalgia trip for me just looking at the book, because so many of those ads and little cover or those whole full sheets are things I remember from when I was a kid looking at comic books, the back page of Boy's Life, or the inside sheets in some of the comic books from my golden age, which is the late 40s, early 50s, it's all there. I mean, it's the stuff that I grew up on.
I am sorry. I'm messing with you, Larry. You're just a young boy, aren't you?
Well, I really thought that was necessary to make it feel like it was an old copy of a book that somebody had found in their attic but was still in pristine condition. What was that? The adding the genuine articles that you know, I got from scanned from 1940s and 1950s publications, so they are original, which is really what I was going for.
Uh-huh.
Oh, you actually scanned them from magazines?
I got them from a couple of sources. There's an online resource called goldenagecomics.co.uk that have a huge library, hundreds of thousands of public domain comic books and comic books that have gone out of copyright. And so thousands of people are involved with this project of scanning, uploading, checking the copyright. So without those guys, I'd have been scuppered, because, you know, they did all the hard work in terms of finding finding the comics.
Josh, I'm just wondering, you know, what was it like for you doing something kind of like in this kind of vintage style, you know, for the website and that? What's your day job then? Is your day job kind of structured so it doesn't really get into the creative side, or is whoever you work for, are they quite a creative company?
You know, it really varies company to company, you know, for your clients and budget-wise. Sometimes you have to grab something off the shelf and move fast, and sometimes you have a lot of creative freedom. It really depends on how much design they already have or if they're a brand-new company starting from scratch. But obviously, they're usually a more modern look, so it was nice to do something that felt a little vintage and that had some age to it.
Dee, I want to ask you this as well. You know, because obviously there will be, you know what I mean, volume two, and it's, you know what I mean, I'm quite open for ideas. Would you suggest doing the same kind of vintage style, or, you know, when you were saying like McSweeney's do something different every? I've never actually seen one of them ones, but
you should subscribe. They're amazing. One of my favorite ones came recently. It was a cigar box full of kind of 1950s ephemera, postcards, cigarette cards, letters, and it was all packaged and it all kind of told one story, but told through, you know, all this different mixed media. They're amazing. So I think that maybe go for a vintage look for volume two, but a different vintage look, a different era, maybe 70s, maybe 80s or something.
Oh, you see, you know? That's why you're in advertising. The fucking things are just floating off you. I never even thought of that. I was just thinking, well, we either stick to the 50s and then that's it, or we just, you know, totally different. Oh.
Well, I'm hoping now, that because the deadline was so tight on this particular issue, we, I think we gave ourselves 2 weeks up against an immovable deadline, that for volume two, but I contacted an awful lot of illustrators and comic book artists who, within the two-week period, you know, just couldn't contribute. Whilst I did get a few who were able to, which was brilliant, and my thanks to all of them. That next time round, we'll have maybe 6 months to start sending out to illustrators and to comic book artists, and we can get an awful lot of more.
Yes, because I mean, I got an email off you saying, and I forget, was it Dave McKean?
Dave McKean, I contacted and through Twitter, and I said, you know, here's this project, would you be interested? And he was like, oh yeah, cool. And then, you know, one thing or another, the deadlines and everything, it was just, no, they were too busy, had exhibitions and everything coming up. But, you know, a lot of people either said, look, here, you can take something that I've done before, you know, if you find something, go for it, or there was one or two who actually did new illustrations for us. But I'd say maybe 30 or 40 people who I contacted said, look, deadline is too tight, but we're totally on board for volume two. So just, you know, give me 6 months.
Hey, that's quite, you know, I mean, bless, it's all been kind of, everything is kind of free. Do you know what I mean? It's one of them things. And I mean, we haven't actually, well, I don't know how many people sell in the real world. Do you know what I mean? I don't know if the kind of, if everyone knows, you know, when you're kind of first time writer, you don't get that many sales and that. But I'm sure you must know as well, I'm sure we're about 72 from the Lulu site, and I cannot remember how many on the Blurbs.
There's about 30 on Blurb. I think we've cracked 100, which I think is brilliant.
Yeah, well, that's, yes. Do you know what I mean?
Considering as well, there's four variations. There are some people who bought that very expensive first paperback on Lulu, which had the ridiculous post and packaging on it.
Oh, I know. I mean, like you say, and that's where kind of Josh comes in as well. You know what I mean? Josh, thank you, because every so often, do you know what I mean? It was like, we would send Josh something, and it was like, oh, that changed that, Josh. You can't have that. And that was a prime example with that postage. And Lulu is, I'm glad now we're kind of through that, but it is a bit of a minefield, especially when, like, Dee's, because Dee, is that right what you're saying? It's like the layout for each page. I mean, yeah, you're getting it be off pat now, I guess. It's getting a bit easier, but it took you about an hour or something first time round?
Well, yeah, it can vary. Like a full, you know, 14-page story could maybe take 3 or 4 hours to lay out, but it's not just a case of cutting and pasting the text in. It's kind of looking at individual lines and seeing if they're too gappy, or, you know, trying to pull lines back so you don't have one word sitting on its own.
See, I was just thinking, you know, I just presumed you kind of, or I'll just pick that size and we'll, you know, it all does it online. Now, that's what I'm used to, but obviously it's a
little
bit. Well,
I think that's a service that Lulu and Blurb offer you. Just upload a Word document and it'll convert it for you. But I think with the way that we had it set up, that it needed to be individually laid out per page.
Wow.
So, Larry, then, I mean, talking about, Larry, just talking about Volume 2, would you be interested in donating something else to that grand cause?
Volume 2 of Starship Sofa Stories?
Yes.
Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. So, what?
No, just it's, I'll tell you what, out of all of them, Larry, you know what I mean? I mean, it's nice to have, like, say, like Michael Moorcock and all
of them. Tony, can I just butt in here and just ask you a quick question? We've been talking a lot about the layout of the magazine, the look of it, which is brilliant, which is wonderful. How about the stories? How difficult was it to get some of those people on board for what is for them a freebie? I mean, it was no problem getting me. I just gave it to you because what the hell? I do make money at this. I do get paid for a lot of my writing. But
not off me.
I know Gene Wolfe gets paid, and I know Michael Moorcock gets paid, and Elizabeth Baer, and all the Joe Lansdale, certainly. And Joe Lansdale is a karate guy, so if you don't pay him, he comes.
come and get you. Well, I'll go through them all. Do you know what I mean? And like I say, Michael Moorcock straight away had no problem whatsoever. Yep. Do you know what I mean? He just, I don't know what, you know what I mean? And he just seems to be so, or he is just so kind. Do you know what I mean? He's like, of course, Tony. You know what I mean? It wasn't like, as if I shouldn't have asked him. You know what I mean? It was that kind of effect.
Yeah.
Ken Scholes was lovely. He didn't say yes straight away. Oh, he did. But then he was saying, you know, he was a bit concerned about the kind of print on demand because it's forever. Do you know what I mean?
Sure.
It's got that kind of... It's got that...
A lot of writers have a big problem with that, and I don't blame them. It is, as you say, forever. It's an eternity.
Mm-hmm.
So
That was just Ken's kind of concept. But, like, again, straight away, he was, you know, he said, that's not a problem. Elizabeth Baer, fantastic. You know what I mean? No problem. And, you know, and it's funny, like, she's... Them stories, you know, they're all... That's a Hugo winning one. You know, I thought I might have had a little bit of trouble with... You know, maybe that particular story, but she was lovely. Michael Bishop, you kind of get a sweeter man than him. All Michael said was, and he's actually sent me one of his books as well. He says, can I have a copy? Do you know what I mean? Because I'm going to send them all one, but up to now, I think I've only sent Michael Bishop a copy there. Again, Spider Robinson, he was cool.
Yeah.
Gord, I think Gord had to, Gord's exact words were something like, it isn't going to probably make any more. It's done its business. You know what I mean? It says, by all means. You know what I mean? It's kind of, it's been in the best of, you know, some big collection. He was quite happy with that. This guy, Larry Santoro, he was a stubborn old mule. You know what I mean? It took a while to break down the barriers there. Gene Wolfe, Benjamin Rosenbaum, Joe Lansdale, Al Reynolds, everyone. Do you know what I mean? Jeffrey Ford was... just purely concerned because it's just come out, or it's just coming out. He's got a one called The Empire of the Ice Cream. It's like a collection of his short works, and it's by like an independent, you know, publisher. And he was saying, oh, it's just the wrong time, Tony. And I said, and I was quite happy. I was going to say to Jeff, just give us anything. Do you know what I mean? If I can just get a story off you, I'll be happy. You know, then he wrote back. And I said, well, it's also going to go on his PDF, Jeff, and that's going to go, like, around the internet all together. Do you know what I mean? I says, that's the one that's kind of an advert for use. And then he just emailed back straight. He says, Tony, just bloody use it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I mean, there is that quality of a story that it has a life, and it's going to earn for the writer a little bit here and there in whatever subsequent printings it has after its initial run. And after a bit, then that life is kind of over, and a writer doesn't mind giving it up, I guess. With Little Girl, for example, as I was saying earlier, that was a story that I wrote simply because I had to write it. It was something that came out of me literally as fast as I could type it, and I never expected it to see print anywhere. I read it aloud a few times and had some positive responses to it, but suddenly somebody asked me for a story for an anthology, and I said, well, you can have this one, or you could have this one, and I sent them two choices, and they said, well, we want this one, Little Girl, and I was surprised. because it is a story that doesn't really necessarily lend itself well to somebody sitting and reading and in the quiet of one's own soul.
It needs a warning, Larry. It needs a warning.
Yeah, it does. It does need a warning.
Actually, but anyway, we had to add a warning quite close to the very end of the publication when we realised that there might be kids reading it.
Yeah, I saw that because I noticed that sort of appeared after the initial read-through, after I did the initial...
I think it may not even be on the very first issue that I bought off Lulu. I think it may have only happened kind of on the second or third amend.
Ah.
I'll have a look because I've actually got the first Lulu one on the what you call it, the deluxe one, so it might be... I tell you, can anyone see... I mean, Dean knows the answer to this. There was one writer that just would not give us a story. Can anyone see, hazard a guess at who that would be? And I'll tell you, it's Mail, and I pestered him, and I was backwards and forwards with Dean saying, I'll try this one with him, but no luck. Anybody hazard a guess?
Oh, I dear.
I don't know.
Ted Chiang.
Ah.
Really?
Yes. And
surprising.
Well, I don't know. He's like, maybe because, I don't know, because the big ones I've had, and that's been great, you know, but I tried for Merchant and the Alchemist Gate, and, you know, he come back. And I've tried for a couple of things. He's had an essay printed in another magazine, and he wouldn't let us get just that narrated as a fact article. And he's not kind of nasty about it. He says, Tony, I'm not ready for that. You know, he's not kind of being stuck up or anything like that. So I sent that.
Good thing you didn't have any dealings with Harlan Ellison on this.
Oh, point. I know. Bloody hell.
Do you know Harlan?
Did one of them, an old show on him, and kind of, you know what I mean? And you pay him, mother. Carol,
he has that mantra whenever you talk to him. There it is. Get paid. It literally is a mantra with him. Don't do anything for free. Don't give anything for free. Don't expect anything for free. Get paid.
I think that's really silly. You know, especially when you're starting off, you know, one thing that I have definitely learned is you got to pay your dues. I mean, even if you're, you know, you got some small awards or something like that, or you're just getting, you know, your name out there, you still got to pay your dues. You know, you got to take those free jobs once in a while and do that work that's not going to pay very well, if at all, you know.
Coming out of a theater background, that is my... you pay your dues all your life in theater unless you become a superstar at 19, which some people do. So, yeah. Pay your dues, learn your craft. I guess Harlan felt that he had paid his dues in the streets, switchblades and such, so he didn't have to pay anymore.
Well, Ted Chiang wasn't nowhere near. I would have been the icing on the cake, I suppose, to get him, but I didn't really want to kind of mention that we didn't get him or anything like that at the time, do you know what I mean? Because I was quite... Well, I was just over the moon with what we got. You know, when the first emails went out, you know, after I kind of deep put the question to us, you know, I was thinking, bloody hell, we're going to get loads back here. That's you're joking. You're having it for free. Now you want it for free in the kind of the written word as well. But, do you know what I mean? And I mean, don't get us wrong, it'd be lovely to kind of pay them. Do you know what I mean? But like I say, we've hit 100. Do you know what I mean? You couldn't afford, you know, I've only sold 100. That wouldn't make any money. And even because it's print on demand, you know, like free copies, you know, like just send it. That's all just got to come out of it. Do you know what I mean? So, and the whole idea, you know, it was to kind of, it was this celebration to kind of try and raise some funds for this show. So.
But I don't even think it was much of a money-making thing. I think it was more about the celebration. And the sharing of the stories, which was why I initially suggested a PDF as opposed to a book, that it was just about getting the stories out there.
Yeah.
I tell you what, I was quite surprised with, though, you know, and I am surprised with the number, you know what I mean? Like, that's like nearly 100 people have kind of forked out. It's And it's this thing that I'm sure Corey's right with it. You know what I mean? People will come and pay it because they want the book as well as the kind of, you know, all them stories. You can go onto my show now and listen to them. Do you know? But that's not the point. It's to have the book and, you know, and you give it away for free on one hand and there it is. It's up to you if you want it on the other hand.
Books will never die, though. That's the thing. People, like, you can download your music and stick it onto your iPod and, you know, you don't miss having the CDs, but a book, you know, you'd miss not having a book. That's, you know, a Kindle or something like that just has no interest for me because it doesn't replace, you know, the lovely feel of a book.
Yeah, and the smell of a book, the touch of it, just seeing it on a shelf, even after it's been read or as yet unread, you look at it on the shelf, it becomes a visual part of your life.
Absolutely.
It's a very tactile thing. Sure.
But it also lasts longer. I mean, that's, to me, whenever I think of books, you know, you've got nothing modern really connecting them. It's something that's been around for hundreds of years, or if not more. And you know, you could have a book that's hundreds of years old, but you probably won't have a CD that's hundreds of years old. You know, they'll be bad in 12 years. So,
yeah,
you know.
Rocks, papers, electrons. Yeah, paper beats electron any day.
Well, it's, you know, it's so close to the truth that I'm just working at the minute with Josh, and I'm uploading some of the old shows again that have on the site, and I'm sure I'm missing some of them. Do you know what I mean? It's like, I'm thinking,
that's just bad filing, Tony.
That could be because I've you know, a couple of times now, you know, I've kind of wiped this machine, this hard drive, and, you know, I've got other kind of little hard drives, external ones and that, but I'm still thinking, where are they? Do you know what I mean? I'm sure there's some missing there, and that's it. They're gone. You know what I mean? Where, like you say, at least the paperback, you know, it's out there somewhere.
Well, that is one good advantage of publishing them out on the net, then, is that once they're out there, you're never going to lose them. Somebody's always going to have a copy somewhere. So if you lose episode 37, you can say, hey, somebody sent me episode 37, and they'll dig it up for you. So it's kind of a collecting backup.
I just had Tony send me a line. He's like, oh, yeah, I need all those covers because I can't find them on my computer.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot about that. You know, every cover we've had for, like, say, Starship so far, you know, like the monthly covers. Well, the idea is to maybe get them into a kind of calendar as well, or a couple of calendar styles. And then I was looking on my computer.
Life is full of what ifs. Some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? United Healthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, to get 30, to get 20, 20, 20, to get 20, 20, to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Again, there's not, no, there wasn't one, and I'm like, when I actually sent that email, you know, I was thinking, he's gonna think I'm a right numpty here. Do you know what I mean? These are one of the main things, you know, like a Starship Sova. Skeet, have you got all of them?
Oh, yeah, I got every last one.
I wanted to ask you that, do you ever sell your originals?
Not regularly. I've had a few clients come to me and ask for work for whatever they wanted, and you know, they'll ask right off the bat, you know, if I get the originals. And I think they're hung up on the exclusive right concept where, you know, if they've got everything, you know, they think that that makes it so they've got exclusive rights. So, you know, that's fine. And occasionally I'll do it, but most of the time they don't even ask for it. And I don't ask them either, because I'd rather keep the originals if I can. So,
yeah, I just wonder, because I have a good friend who's an illustrator who makes archival copies, photographic copies of a lot of his work, which he sells at conventions to great benefit to himself. I've bought quite a few. And he also makes available a lot of his original artwork because he does a lot of stuff, I think, that just as you did for the cover of this book, he does a lot of things just on spec, or an image strikes him and he'll do a painting and then it will be used somewhere eventually. And I was just wondering if you did that too, because I would like to acquire perhaps some of the work that you're going to be doing for the Lord Darwin's story.
Yeah.
Perhaps. Yeah, sure. If I could afford it. I may not be able to afford it.
And it's only a few $1,000, you know. Now, you know, the thing that I've really noticed lately, and it just kind of hit me about 2 months ago, is that most of the work that I've been doing, I've been really pushing myself to start nearly everything on the computer. So I've got a lot of original art that is nowhere except on the hard drive, whereas I used to sketch everything out, then I'd ink it in, and then I'd scan it in. But the big setback with a lot of that is, you know, if I'm pressed for time, every time I draw something with ink on paper, it bleeds on a sort of very small level when you zoom in. And for printing purposes, sometimes you can get, you know, what they call a bridge in some of the printing that gets done, where if you have really small lines that are close together, they might just fill in. So, you know, a lot of times I go back into my computer and then I've got to clean all that up, and it just takes twice as long. So I'm moving slowly towards doing everything on the computer, so I can just skip that step altogether. But it is kind of a drawback, just because I don't have any kind of original, you know, paper artwork there. I have to actually print one out to put in my portfolio.
Yeah, I've been doing the same thing ever since I got my Wacom. I pretty much do everything right on the computer too. I maybe pencil something out, but beyond that, all the inking, coloring, and everything, I've moved online too onto the computer.
Yeah, there's some really good sites out there that show you how to do just this amazing stuff using that Wacom tablet. I love that thing.
Mm-hmm.
Is it a good thing then, Scoot and Josh, is it like an easy habit to fall into? You know what I mean? You really should be doing it the kind of the pen and ink way, or is it just now all the work, you know what I mean, like a lot of work is just digital, that's just the way it is?
No, they both have their advantages and disadvantages. I think, you know, when you're doing it analog, offline, you're going to get more texture and more warmth, and it's just going to have a different kind of feel to it. And when you're doing it on your computer, it's probably going to be more, you know, crisp and more clean, unless you put a lot of effort into making it differently than that. But you have a lot of other tools at your disposal. It's kind of like having a whole art shop right in a little box.
Yeah, I'm kind of the same way. You know, and one thing that I really prefer, if I know I'm going to be somewhere and I got some time on my hands, I love to just go outside and sit on a park bench and draw. So I'll take my sketchbook for that. It seems like most of the computer work that I do is strictly because I'm on a time crunch. I have to get something done. I'm trying to cut corners, and it's really not the leisure art that I do on the side. It's more just the business art.
So you don't do paint on canvas at all, or on whatever kind of board?
Oh, not anymore. Now, the great thing about Photoshop and all these wonderful programs like that is it's instant gratification. You know, you say, I want this square to be purple. Well, just push a button and there it is. And if you don't like the color of purple, you can change it immediately. It's a wonderful tool. So, you know, I never learned how to draw, I never learned how to paint with real paint. I never had any classes on it or anything like that. I taught myself
to... Never had to mix colors and things like that, huh?
Yeah, I never did anything like that. I was strictly, I used pencil, then the pen and ink, and then I'd fill everything in with color pencil.
And I did that for years and years and years. And people were, how do you get these colors like that? It's just because I've learned how to blend them. And now that I'm on the computer, it's like now I'm teaching myself how to paint, because I had done graffiti art with, you know, spray cans on walls when I was younger. And it's the same principle. You kind of got to work in reverse to layer things to get the effect that you want. But, you know, it's so much quicker, especially on the computer. So, I mean, it's that's where I do all my painting.
So the only disadvantage to you, though, is that you don't get that back-end cash flow that, say, my friend Alan Clark gets when he actually sells a piece that's an illustration and then takes that painting and gets to sell it for literally several thousands of dollars at a convention.
Yeah, but nobody knows who I am. So.
Yeah. A lot of people do prints, though. They'll do a limited edition and a print quality. You know, there's a big difference between low quality and high quality. It's still worth it to buy a nice high quality print, even if the source material is digital.
That's all I do. Sure. Is print right now. I almost everything I do, I print out for at least one for myself. For I've got a show coming up where I've probably got about 30 different images I'm printing off. So.
To be quite honest, though, Skeet, it must cost you quite a bit in inks. And are you just printing at home?
No. No, actually, I take the file to Kinko's. I let them spend the money because it's pretty cheap there. So,
I was going to say.
Enough of them done, it doesn't cost a lot.
Skeet, just do us a big favor then. Tell us how you kind of tackled this from like a, you know, the hardware point of view to do this picture. Was this done with like a tablet and just colored in on the computer?
Yeah, I did, you know, just when I draw everything, I do a lot of research because, you know, I can try to imagine everything in my head all I want. But, you know, I think with most artists, you need some sort of reference. So, you know, I do a lot of online research trying to find, pictures of what I think, you know, a caveman looks like, or pictures of what I think a robot looks like. And most of the time I use, like with the robot, I actually found a site that had a bunch of bodybuilders on there. And I found this one girl that had a great pose. And so I just went in, took her image, and I put it into Photoshop. And then I used my drawing pad just to kind of go over her image and then lay the metalwork over her skin and then color it using, you know, the airbrush tool and all that. And everything else was done pretty much the same way to a degree. I just took there's a couple Smithsonian cavemen that are in the museum, and I took their images and just sketched out the same basic pose and got them looking, you know, pretty grimy looking. So trying to make them look like they just walked out of a cave. So yeah, I mean that was pretty much it. You know, it's the same old Photoshop and using the drawing pad and just the combinations of colors and textures. Oh. That was about it.
And how?
Yeah, I'm looking.
Larry, I was going to ask you there, just how, because Larry's sent over, am I right in thinking, Larry, you've sent over some words for Skeet for other pictures?
I didn't send any bits of the story, which I will do later this weekend, Skeet, by the way. I'll send you some actual sections of the story that if you're interested in seeing them. What I sent him was just some basic notices about what will be happening at certain points in the story. There is a dirigible flight, for example. There is somebody holding forth on a railing high above a crowd in a Victorian-looking steel and marble edifice. Things like that. But I'll send you some things later this afternoon or tomorrow, Skeet.
Okay. Yeah, I'm really excited about
I don't know where you are in the process yet. I'm sorry.
Well, I haven't really started. I said I haven't really started anything yet. But I mean, the images that you sent over, the photos that you sent over for references, is just awesome. I have so many jobs where people are like, "Here, draw this." And I'm like, "Okay, what do you mean?" But you sent over these very specific images that are very inspiring, and it reminds me of a movie called Steam Boy. I don't know if you've ever seen that before.
Sure.
Oh yeah, it really kind of set me in mind of that, and that was just an awesome visual movie. So
yeah, as I mentioned in the last process report, I said think steampunk, but it really isn't steampunk. when you read the story, you'll see what I'm talking about. And I don't want to give too much away. I will send you some more, some actual pieces of the story so you can get an idea. And this is the interesting thing about doing work this way. And I've never worked quite this way before with a piece of prose writing. I've worked on plays like this where we were evolving whole scripts out of improv and pieces that set designers were bringing into the mix and so forth. But I've never worked quite this way. And what's neat about this is if I can early enough, Skeet, get some of the images from you, if just a sketch or a rough idea, I can always adjust the story. Well, you know, that it can be done.
Skeet, you've got Nazis in the story.
Well, what's that UFO doing there?
And zombies.
Oh, God, well, don't put zombies. Oh, God. Oh.
That would be great, though, because, you know, there's nothing more disappointing than an art that deviates wildly from the story. So having two that are in sync like that would be, you know, really gratifying
for the D, what I was been dying to ask you as well is, you know, this whole layout, you know, we kind of know you've been inspired by this kind of 50s thing. But how did you come about, just like, say, choosing a font and getting that logo, you know, the rocket? Because that seems to have, like, took over my life there now. You know, I love the bloody thing. And I've always kind of struggled. I've always wanted the word Starship Sova in, you know, kind of one word and that. And then along you come with this kind of idea and then this rocket and then it's inside the rocket like that. Where did you get your kind of inspiration from to kind of put it together like this?
Well, I think the oldest publication I found was the Internet Archive, and it was a magazine called Super Science Stories from 1932 or something like that, and it was like somebody had scanned it, but it was in bits when they scanned it already, and it pretty much, I stole the look and feel from that because it was the oldest, most genuine article I could find. And that was it, basically, from that publication. I found a similar looking font, you know, a nice serif font that would have been used in the 30s and 40s and 50s. And the two-column approach, which is very unusual within a book, I think also helps to kind of give that magazine feel. And actually, when you see it in the new hardback Lulu version, which is the oversized hardback, it really works amazingly because the size of it, it just feels it feels like an old book.
Well, it's funny. I'm looking forward to getting that as well. So that'll be quite nice. So,
what's the hardback going to be?
Sorry,
I'd say how much larger is the hardback going to be?
It's about it's A4, which is just slightly under the fool's cap.
Sure.
So, and it's the same thing. Like I didn't redesign it or anything. I just used the files that I had, and I blew them up to fit onto the page. So I actually didn't have to do a full new page layout. But it, you know, it's a lot roomier. There's a lot more space on the page, and it just feels lighter. Because I know on the blurb digest version, or the kind of the small paperback, there's quite a lot of text on the page, and the typeface is quite small, but that was because it was designed for a bigger size and then transported across this other size when we realized that Lulu were charging an incredible amount of money in order to send the cheap paperback.
I mean Lulu is a bit of a minefield. Do you know what I mean? It's how do you kind of know this? Like you say, it's just It took you, you know, like I say, I guess, a couple of days or something to sort it out, the layout, the kind of second time when we made the mistake. And then you find out it's still not right, and it just must be mind-boggling, that place.
Yeah, I'd never used an online print-on-demand service like that, so I had absolutely no idea what to expect. And it wasn't as messy as it could have been. It was pretty straightforward, and it was only once we did find out that, you know, the prices were ridiculous and some of the things that we had to go on to Blurb and then, you know, relay it for Blurb. But that was fine. It's all part of the process. But it's done now, and we know that next year for volume two, what to do and what not to do and what sizes we can do and which is the best for... Because even there's a Kindle version available from smashwords.com, and I've never done an e-book before. So that was another learning curve. Now, it was only because somebody on the Facebook fan page said, oh, man, I want a Kindle version. So I said, okay, I'll go do that as well. So made that available. So that was another 2 or 3 days of work of reformatting all the text to work as an EPUB. But, you know, somebody wanted it, so it got done. So I think there's been about 12 versions of the EPUB sold, which is, you know, which is great as well. So that's another couple of versions of the book floating around in a different format as well.
So, Dee, then, just jumping into the future then, have you got any kind of, like I say, I'm open to any suggestions, have you got any good ideas for Volume 2 in... Because I've always kind of, I like this idea. I know you kind of said when the big hardback came, just make it the one. But I quite like this idea of different varieties, you know, and well, and even different covers. I don't know, have you got any thoughts for Volume 2?
I haven't thought that far ahead, really. But it's very much in the Cory Doctorow school of thinking of make as many versions as available as possible to as many people. You know, so if you make it free to 1,000 people, you might just get 10 people who buy it, and it's worth it for the 10 people who buy it.
Well, that's so it's. I mean, that's when because we got it on. You know, I don't think it was just lucky enough because I kind of pissed at Corey quite a few times. You know, we got it on Boing, and you know, I was getting donations because I could tell the normal donations from the. Like they say, the book donations, because on the normal donations, when the email comes, thing it always says 42. That must have been like a long time ago, you know, the kind of Douglas Adams, the 42. Yeah. On the email, it comes in that. So I was all of a sudden getting these other donations. And at first, I was thinking, well, how is that? Who's just donating this for? And then I was thinking, that's coming from people just being kind enough to donate via, you know, Josh's site, you know, so... It's a bizarre world we live in, you know, and
it's very much it's computer game developers are using the term Latin now, freemium, where it's 1% of the sales is supporting 99% of the people who are playing the game.
Mm-hmm.
So as opposed to, you know, 99% of the people paying for the 1% of people who are pirating the game. So it's a very different way of thinking in terms of publishing.
I'll tell you what has been like a definite increase as well is since we've been talking about it. You know, like you say, the book came out a couple of weeks ago, but we've been mentioning it, you know, for 3 weeks before that. There's been like a definite increase in just even audio figures. You know, now I'm kind of over the 5,000 on a weekly kind of thing. No, sometimes you would have like a nice spike and you would get the 5,000, but you would kind of be hovering around the 4. Now the figures are always up there, which is, it's got to be down to that.
There's a question I've been meaning to ask Josh now. You have the Google Analytics on the website.
Yeah.
Do we know how many people have downloaded the PDF at this stage or viewed it on issue or... Do we have any of those kind of figures?
We don't have a specific number on how many people specifically downloaded the PDF, but like I can look and I can see that we had 3,000 views on the ebook page. So that tells me that, you know, 3,000 people potentially either downloaded the PDF or look at the flash ebook right on the page or somehow consumed it. So,
that's
but yeah, there's definitely a big spike in traffic.
At least 2,000 of those me anyway, so...
well, I'm just like, you see, and you know what as well, Dee, which was is a good thing, or an unusual thing, is like, until you get the book in your hands, do you know what I mean? It's like, we were like flying by the seat of our pants with like holding our breath, you know, counting to 10, and is it, you know, and when it came... That first time it came for me, I don't know if you were the same, Dee, you know, when I kind of opened it, there was like a definite thump in my heart thinking, let's just hope, you know, because some of the things I have had like done in the past, like printed off things, you know, especially for like business cards, you know, they've come through the post and it's like, I've got my fucking phone number wrong. Do you know what I mean? It's like as basic as that, you know what I mean? Ho, ho, ho. And I was thinking, you know... Starship Sofa, but there might not be the word sofa on or something silly like
it
that.
It is very unusual to do a project like this and not get your proofs back before it goes on sale. But, it very much was the flying by the seat of our pants and just hoping that it would all work out. But, you know, I guess in the karmic wheel, we've done something right that we were able to do this project without there being too many disasters, or any disasters at all, in fact.
Well, I think it was that one where, like I say, we pulled it as quick as we can, but, you know, how much was the postage, Steve? Was it something like over...
Oh, I think, yeah, it was... The A5 book that we did initially with the glossy whiteboard, that like the deluxe version that we have now, worked out at $14.99, and then there was $6 post and packaging or something. So it worked out at about £20 or something. But the small paperback cheap version, which I think was working out at $6.99 or something like that, had like £17 post and packaging on it, which made it £5 more expensive than the deluxe. That was when we had to
quickly change. I bought three of those. Wait a minute.
Well, you know, some people did, you know what I mean? And it's like, oh, what are you saying?
We only had it up there for about an hour or something before we realized that we had to pull it. So there was about 7 sales on that.
Mm-hmm. It was, and all I can say is that, you know what I mean? Well, it's a one of a, well, there's one of 7, you know what I mean? So...
But also, there's a Braille version available. When somebody on Corey's site put a request in for stories that they could use for Braille in a high school in America, and I thought, well, you know, this is perfect. There'd be some teenage boys who'd obviously would love this type of thing. So it's available in Braille as well, which is amazing.
I actually forgot it. I remember you saying, is that okay to kind of go down that way? And I was like, oh, yes, you know what I mean? But I forgot all about that as well, so...
Hey, did you thought about doing that in any other language, or were we just sticking to English on this?
Oh, okay, we'll stick to English. and 25 different versions.
I'll tell you what, mind, like I say, it will be... I'm looking forward to, like, 2, just for... You know what I mean? To kind of get stuck in there, and I really enjoyed it, Dee. I know it might have been, you know, when I was starting to like throw these ideas back at Dee from this one email, you know, and Josh as well. You know what I mean? Josh, can you build this? Like, can you do this? Can you do that? Can you do that? That was just me getting excited. You know what I mean? I'm hoping.
And after the excitement, Tony, you got the panic. So the last year or 3 days there, you're all panic.
Oh, but that's like I say, it's. And because before we kind of had you all on board, you know, and really running me kind of the stuff, and you know, even like Skeek with the art and everything like that, before all that came about, when I was on the old kind of sofa site, you would, it's just like a nightmare, you know, you'd even just getting a show up was a, it's so irritating, it was so like annoying, it wouldn't work, and then I'd have to maybe wait like 48 hours, do you know what I mean? And like, if you come to kind of people come to you, it doesn't depend on you, but at least, you know, enjoy the show. And if I kind of get it out, but now you'd like to say, if anything's like, Josh, bless you, you know what I mean? Josh, can you do this? And it was something, what Josh wanted to email you for just the other day, and it was like, I needed something done. Oh, I think it was the hardback book one, you know, that's going on sale now, Josh, can you do it now? You know, and it was done.
Well, that's the nice part about publishing online or even the print on demand is that you're not stuck like you are if you were to order 10,000 copies and then all of a sudden they're all wrong or you want to change something. It's nice not to have to commit that you can change on the fly like that.
That is it.
Actually, it is great because I have spotted a few things that like, oh no, I need to fix that. You know, it's got the wrong position on the page or the wrong number or something like that. And being able to fix and upload without it affecting the downloads of it. So that's been great. I'm actually not even reading it anymore, just in case I spot something that nobody else has spot but would annoy me for the rest of my life. So,
it was really nice. Early on in the process, I think right after the PDF became available, before I even got my... I think I had ordered my copy of the book, but the PDF was online. I looked at that, and I suddenly realized that the last story in the book had the last page missing, and then the first page of the author's bios was missing. And I sent Tony a note, and he passed out, I think, and then was recovered. Because and it was corrected like within an hour or something of that sort. So
that's nice. It does seem like this kind of new era is springing up there, especially for, you know, like everyone who enjoys this, what we're into, you know, this kind of into to do something like this, like what Larry's saying, you can just sort it out and get it done, and
yeah,
fantastic. Larry, I've got to ask you this, though. You know, you're writing this story, and you might think you're in a happy place there, but when you hear your process reports, you're sometimes going through a little bit of hell and back. What?
Well, you know, a lot of that is because I'm sitting in my office at City Hall in Chicago with the door closed and hoping my boss doesn't show up as I'm recording this. So I'm sitting there in a kind of semi-panic, and that's what you're hearing. And I'm using this headset that I'm using now, so it gives it a breathy quality, I guess. You're used to hearing me on the really good recording mic.
What I'm keen to ask you is, what's it like then? Like you say, you make money. Do you know what I mean? This is your kind of living as well. You're going to write this story.
Yes.
You're not even going to get a chance to get it in a book as a freebie anyways. Do you know what I mean? Because it's a one-off book. And it's funny, I emailed the guy, you know, who's kind of ordered it and bought it. And because I was saying, can I do, like, because we've got different varieties. I says, the story of each, you know, in different books. And he was saying, well, that might have knocked us off, you know, buying it. And I was thinking, well, I wanted to sell it anyways. What's it like, Larry, for you then? You're not going to really, you're going to get it and it's going to be out there, but in that book with them pictures.
Yes, yes.
Do you know what I mean? There isn't going to be a copy for you. What's that? Just do all this and then the end result, you know, that.
It is misery. Misery. Misery.
How do you think I feel?
Actually, maybe I'll get to see some of the artwork eventually. I guess maybe I could ask somebody to send me some copies of the artwork and let me know at what point in the story it comes, and then I could sort of assemble something, some poor little thing on my computer and look at it and say, now
if that were on...
Yeah, Kinko's. No, I'm not that smart. I don't know enough about things to do that, but... It's enough to know that it exists somewhere in the world and that somebody is keeping it in a piece of plastic behind a shelf of other books somewhere.
I suppose when you think about it, though, in a way, because I was laughing and joking, Larry, I mean, we know what we're doing it for, do you know what I mean? And it's you know, I wish we could just give, I wish I could have done every book there and sold every one. You know, I've had actually another email, you know, of a gentleman who was more than happy to buy it. And like I say, it's gone, and it would have been great to have two of them out and send more money over, you know. So,
yeah.
Well, gentlemen, I've really enjoyed this. This has been a free show for me. You know what I mean? Just talking with my mates and talking about this, sure, this book as well. I kind of thank yous enough. Do you know what I mean? For like each and every one of yous, you know, for kind of helping us out with this. It's just been probably the highlight of doing Starship Sofa. Do you know what I mean? And I hope as well, because you know, I've getting loads of emails like. The pleasure this is actually, honestly, has brought people, you know what I mean? So I've gotten loads and loads and loads. So I know I've kind of pestered you a lot of the time, you know what I mean? But it has brought happiness to some people. So honestly, thank you so much, Josh, Dee, Larry and Skeet. You have been stars. Thank you so much.
And thank you, Tony.
Thank you, Tony.
Yeah, it was my pleasure, Tony.
Oh, I see. And this is just, I mean, like, see, I'll be pestering you as much.
Can't you just feel the love?
The beach tales we've got to do now, isn't it?
So, what was that, D?
It's the beach tales we have to do now.
The beach towels, yes, and the gnomes, the garden gnomes.
Yes. I send an email because there's on the forums, as we've kind of talked about, the T-shirts are coming, and actually I'm seeing them there now. They're all kind of nearly geared up there, ready to go. And to get I'm emailing Dean saying, Dean, can we just have it little tilted to the left with another logo there? And it's like, oh. But they're cool. And then on the forums, people started mentioning, I don't know where this has come from, garden gnomes, like Starship Sofa garden gnomes, and I don't think there's any way it'll do them.
I'll tell you where that started. I started that because somebody said he was going to get his T-shirt and then wear it in unusual places and have his photograph taken, and that reminded me of the garden gnome from the movie Amelie, and I thought, well, why don't we have a Starship Sofa garden gnome with a rocket in his pocket or some such something. Thing is that, and
I just you just get out. A really, really small just T-shirt for a
yes, get a
for a regular small. Garden gnome. Yeah, a regulation garden gnome with a small T-shirt. Yeah, sure.
But there's been beach towels, and actually there is somewhere yes. online that actually you can get that sorted out and get printed beach and bathrobes. You can do is you can even get you know them slippers you see in hotels. You know the kind.
You can get tea cups and. Pens and all sorts of things. Yeah, yeah.
Cups are coming. And actually, I think cups will be a good seller. You know, I know that sounds...
There's a cup up on that side already. I had a look at doing one of them. Or I think there's maybe two versions up there.
Yes, there's cups there. We're all just waiting for D. He's got a life and he's got a job, but you know what I mean?
A whole line of Starship Sofa prophylactics, too. Wow. It just suggests.
Oh, come on! This is Starship. Starship lunchbox. I think you could do the Starship flamethrower.
Tin lunchbox would be lovely.
You could actually get a
lunchbox. Would be awesome.
D, have you seen that? And I think that would be because I get quite a lot of people like say are traveling around the country, and I've actually got one in the car now. When I travel to work, me coffee cup. You can actually get one of them thermos. You know the steel stainless steel coffee cups.
Oh yeah.
You can get them. Done on it, and it's on that Zazzle site, you know.
Okay,
so.
Well, we'll have a look at that as well then.
There you go. Just waiting for you, D, sir. and actually, Josh, that's where you come in as well. We'll have to kind of sort that out so we can have like a portal.
There's some lovely widgets on Zazzle that help set up your online store onto your own website, which we can use as well.
That should be pretty easy with WordPress. I'm pretty sure Zazzle and WordPress will play together nicely.
Yeah, they've got that lovely little widget which kind of shows everything on your in your store on a model, so you can kind of flick through, you know, 20 T-shirts and see them on different people and stuff. And it's really nice.
What do they have towels at Zazzle?
We'll have a look.
Well, gentlemen, I'm going to leave you because I've. I've kept you more than enough every day, I think, for about nearly 3 months now. So, you have been stars. Honestly, thank you for coming on today and just sharing, like I said, just the insights into kind of putting this together. You know, like I say, from that first email right up to now and beyond with kind of Larry's story and Skeet's artwork, you know. And there is something coming. I kind of give too much away, but there will be a chance to kind of see Larry's story as well, but you know, so everything's not in vain in one respect, but I cannot really say too much just yet, but there you go.
There it is.
Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming on board. So there you go. The celebration that is Starship Sofa Stories Volume 1. If you haven't gotten a copy yet, please, you know what I mean? Like I say, it's an amazing little project we took on there. And I kind of emphasize, you know what I mean? I get quite a number of books every day coming through to the headquarters. And mine's just as good as any of them, you know, like kind of quality wise. You know what I mean? I'm chuffed to bits with it. And there's been lovely emails, you know, where I got up everyone, you know, who's actually getting the book, you know, because that's a big thing, you know what I mean? I was waiting for the emails coming in thinking, oh, it might, oh, yeah. What if the, you know what I mean? But everyone's been lovely, you know what I mean? And it's just like, oh, it's excellent. So if you want to, you know, dip your toes in our little celebration, please come over and you'll see Josh's site. Click on the book on the front of the website and there you go. Different varieties. And what's going to happen for volume 2? Oh, so that is
Starship Sova's Aura of Light, Shunma 103. I hope you enjoyed it. Hope you'll stick around for next week. Until then, I'd just like to say good night from me.
Will our heroes survive this terrible ordeal? Can they win through with their integrity unscathed? Can they escape without completely compromising their honor and artistic judgment? Tune in next week for the next exciting installment of
Starship Sova. Evacuation procedure initiated. Shuttle set for launch. Airlock will be opened in 3, 2, 1.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.